Paranormal Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner, and with me is Anthony and Tony. Two different people, not the same one. But Tony likes to go by
most valuable person.
Mr. Magoo?
Moogie? Moogoo Guy Pan? Whatever, dude. Okay, so he's smiling, folks. But that means he's not going to say anything because he knows he has nothing to say.
I don't argue with children, so I just usually let them complete their sentences.
Well, that's good that we're not children. So I mean, you don't have to argue. Oh. You could argue with us.
Hey, that's your opinion. I'm not going to argue against.
Well, it's a good thing we're not kids. That's all I can say. I mean, we're adults. You can argue if you want. But
that's a lie. I've seen him argue with children, so don't believe
actually,
that.
Actually, yeah,
I've seen him. You've seen me beat up children.
You that's picked different. On your sister until you were like, you know, in your 20s.
That's just fair.
So here's what we're going to talk about. It's a crazy dog man story that we have. If you want to call it a dog man, I don't know. You call it a werewolf or dog, whatever. It's there. But before we do that, we got the Patreon $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 tier. Each tier gives you a bigger, better swag bag. The $40 and the $50 are the best because you get like four books with the $50 tier, two different authors, mine and somebody else's, or maybe three different authors. But you'll get both of my books and a t-shirt. And $40 tier, you get one of my books and then two other books from different authors and a t-shirt. $30 tier, you get two different books from different author and a t-shirt. $20 tier, you get one book and a t-shirt, and then $10 tier, you get an autographed book. And of course, you get some other little knickknacks and things that go along with it. And any tier is appreciated. Thank you for being a Patreon member and helping us out. Also, we have other ways you can support the show by just going on to the Printful store and ordering a shirt or a hoodie. That's one way to do it. We can, you know, you can help us out and you can represent PRT. I know people were complaining that the spring store was not working, but did we get it up and working?
Yeah,
I
turned it off.
The Printful one is still going, right?
Yeah, the Printful one's up.
Yeah, so you can go and order a shirt, man. It's a good way to help support the show. Now, we keep everything free. We don't like to put it behind a paywall, and we try to put a minimal amount of ads on everything. We have a new schedule that we're on now. We're on Tuesday night from 7 o'clock until or maybe even 6 now. We don't know what we're going to do for sure, like 6 to 8 or 2 or 7 to 8 on the live stream. Wednesday night, we're going to drop this podcast episode, like possibly – it's going to be an hour long, 7 to 8. And then Thursday, we're going to start dropping podcast episodes before Blondes and Booze, when I go on with Blondes and Booze at 8 o'clock afterwards. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, those are all different versions of the live stream. What you get with the Friday is me, Abe Cius, Monica Rollins, and Joe Breezy. Predominantly, that's going to be the lineup with us. And we talk about different topics on the live stream presented to us. And then we do a Saturday show, which is going to be moving to Rumble the second Saturday of May, right? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be our premiere on Rumble on the live. And we are going to talk about some weird, wild stuff involving alien agenda. But we get into all kinds of stuff, and there's been a lot of theology and stuff lately. But we're going to be able to talk about a lot of stuff and talk about it more freely. Now, also, we're going to be doing the Sunday show, like always. It's from 7 p.m. to about 10 p.m. on average, sometimes 7:30 to 10:30, depending on when we get started. And it is just retelling people's encounters. And I've also been doing random lives lately during the day and then on off days, just so we can kind of get a feel for a good time slot that we can start using to go onto Rumble and do some extra work on there. So that is what is happening. That's what's going on. We are going to be starting to do more lives on Rumble once we get that initial one going, because we can speak freely on there. But we will still be dropping these episodes on all of the 15 different platforms along with YouTube. And so that is what this is. All month long for the month of April, I've been getting messages, why'd you guys stop doing shows? And we've literally done like freaking 5 live streams a week. We took one weekend off in April. We took off a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But other than that, you know, just to recuperate and, you know, whatever. We've been dropping it. So that's what we're doing. We're doing it again tonight. And then we don't know exactly when this will drop. You'll probably be listening to this on a Wednesday or a Thursday. So here we go. Everybody understand that? Everybody got it? Are we good? Join the Paranormal Roundtable group and stay abreast of everything that's going on Paranormal Roundtable. This story came to us by way of a friend of ours who's a jiu-jitsu teacher. He got us in touch with a person who he knows we do the Dogman thing. He actually helped me do the translations for a show that we called The Brazilian Exorcist. So he kept telling me, he goes, man, I got this friend, Henrique. He's got a story. And so I finally got in touch with him. And Henrique did not disappoint. It was him and a guy named Cristiano who we ended up talking to. They're from Brazil, a place called Campinas. And it is northwest of Sao Paulo. And that's where that city's from. And they lived on the outskirts, and then they lived out in the middle of nowhere. And there's like a little small village there. And I can't even pronounce the name of it. But it is literally, that's where they grew up. And when I started talking to Henrique, he's jiu-jitsu guy. So, of course, we started talking shop and talking about, you know, basically martial arts, things like that. He's also real into kickboxing. And so he was a really interesting guy, very interesting guy. I really enjoyed talking to you. It was fun. But here's what he told me. He's now living out in Ventura, California. And what the story that he told me was really incredible. When he was young, I think it started when he was 5 years old, he saw something that looked like a winged demon entity or something that was hovering. Like they lived on a second floor, a story building, whatever. And there were literally 8 people that lived in a 4-bedroom house. They had a pretty decent sized house that had been built by his great grandfather. And he lived on the second floor. And he said that it was him and 3 siblings, and then his mother and his dad. And then his grandparents on his dad's side lived with them. And then temporarily his grandmother on his mom's side lived with them too, different times. But he said that, you know, it was a very, very enjoyable and happy childhood. He said, I can't think of anything bad. My dad and mom rarely got upset with us, didn't really spank us. He goes, we weren't bad kids. We didn't really get out of trouble. We didn't get in trouble. We didn't really hang around in town too much. He's like, we were out in the country a lot. But he said at the age of 5, he saw this thing that looked like a winged demon. And when he started to talk to me about this creature, the description he gave me was like, I was thinking like, you know, some sort of reptilian. Like when he first said that, he saw like a winged demon, or I thought like a, you know, anything but what he actually described. I was thinking like a gargoyle. Or maybe it was like, you know, some kind of like
harpy. I mean, anything that you would have
harpy or Mothman type creature. Yeah. But instead, what he described to me was a flying dogman. Like he said, it was like, he started telling me, he goes, you know, the head, it was like canine looking. And he didn't know anything about a dog. He doesn't know what that is. And so he didn't watch my show. So Rodrigo told him about my show. So what he said was that he had nightmares about this thing for years and years and years. And he saw it one time, and for like 3 or 4 years, he had like nightmares about it until he was like 8 or 9. And then some other weird stuff started up. He did say that the house they lived in had some weird activity. His great aunt that had lived there at one time, like which was his grandfather's sister, she had stayed there for a while. She did practice brujeria, which is like a type of magic. And she died in that house, and they had to do a cleanse because they would see her spirit moving around the house. So that was pretty intense. And he said that at one time, his little brother was like looking out the window, and when he pulled away to when his dad tried talking to him, his hands were still there on the sill, and the window came down and mangled his fingers, and he had to go to the hospital, and 2 of his fingers, he no longer has feelings in them. And he looked up and saw the image of their great aunt standing there laughing like a hag. So that was a creepy story. So he had a lot of weird stuff happening, but he said that this winged creature, the way he described it to me, he was talking about the head. He talked about the pointy ears and everything he said, even the backward bent legs, were like this werewolf, literally. But this thing had more than a werewolf. It had wings. And the wings were bat-like, and he said that they had little spikes on the ends of them, like where the tips would be, you know? And he said that it was just awful looking. It had red eyes, and it had its tongue, like, hanging out. You know how when a dog is, like, panting?
Yeah.
He said that's how it looked. And it was this tongue was, like, hanging out to one side, and it looked just absolutely demonic. And it was in the window, but his little brother had a bunch of weird encounters with this thing, and he would talk about it, like, coming to his window and tapping on the window, and even trying to open the window and get inside. And so his dad literally nailed his little brother's window shut because his little brother would sleepwalk and try to go outside. And because they think that this thing tried to grab him. Years later, his little brother told him, he said that he had, his little brother's name is Ezra. He said Ezra told him that he had memories of this winged dogman, demon-like thing grabbing him and flying him around, you know, going all the way to Sao Paulo, like flying across like all this wooded, you know, woodland area, and then taking him over to the city and flying over the city, like carrying him. And then it would scare the crap out of him because it would loop and dive and then threaten to drop him. And so it would just scare the crap out of him. He goes, it was a terrible, terrifying thing because my heart be beating 1,000 miles a minute.
It would do that and then just drop him off back at home.
Yeah.
That's it was like
a horror show. Aladdin.
Yeah. Well, it was what I think he was using him as a battery for energy, you know. And then they had a couple dogs, and one of them had been, you know, left tied up, and it was a horrible thing. Like one of the dogs got basically snatched, you know, and they think it was this creature because his dad saw it too on his way home one day from work. He saw this thing swoop down over the vehicle and scratched the top of the hood. He goes, and for years we had these big claw marks on the top of the hood of my dad's car. And it came from this flying devil or whatever it was. And so years go by, and the sightings of this thing got less and less frequent. And his friend Andres had come to stay. He was living in Rio de Janeiro, and he had come to visit, and he was like, hey, you know, what is there to do in this town? And they were like, you know, in the military together. And his friend, or they were getting ready to join the military together. And his friend told him, you know, what is there to do in this town? You know, let's go do something. And of course, there you can drink at a younger age. So they went out to this bar, and they got into a fight, and the police came, and they were like, you know, sorting it out, whatever. He goes, and while they were literally checking them and arresting, you know, like getting everybody under control, this thing that he hadn't seen since he was a child swooped down and literally knocked one of the policemen over. And the police totally like turned their attention toward this thing. They took their weapons out and started firing at it. He didn't get a good look at it because his face was against the wall. He was told to face the wall, and the police officer had his gun out, so he wasn't going to take any chances. And then they just turned and they unhandcuffed them and told them to beat it. And they all took off, and this Jeep chasing after this thing and shooting at it. And so his friend was like in shock. He couldn't believe that there was this flying wolf-like creature, whatever the heck it was. And so that was the last encounter he had with that thing until he was out of the military when he was 20.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide. So we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Five, and he was back living at home, getting ready to move in with this girl that he was dating. And he said that they were moving to Sao Paulo. And he said that he had a friend, their friend Elias, who started showing up regularly, who was coming to the house. And he said that there were sightings that were going on in and around Campinas, this place where they lived. He said that there were sightings in town and around the edge of town of this wolf-like creature that looked like a werewolf, the Lobozon, as they called it. But it wasn't the same thing as that flying thing. He said it was something totally different. It was really large. It was about 8 foot tall. And he said that this thing had humongous, massive thighs. And he was describing it to me. And at that point, I stopped him. And I said, wait a minute. I was like, how do you know all this, Enrique? He says, because I saw it. He said, me and my brother Cristiano, we saw this thing. And so he goes, him and his friend, Cristiano, were driving. And they saw this thing. And he said that one day it was him, Cristiano, and Andres. You know, they had all grown up together. And his friend Andres was living in Rio de Janeiro at that time, but he had been staying with them, and he had gone there for a job, and he was back, and they were driving around. And he said, dude, we had a few drinks. We've been having a few drinks. And he said, but this thing ran out in front of my friend's van as they were going over this back road, and it had been raining. And so he goes, and we hit this one divot really hard, and when we came up, we were kind of airborne for a second, and this thing flies out in front of us, not literally flapping, so it didn't have any wings. He goes, and our van popped it. He goes, and this thing spun around, and as it did, he goes, I'm in the passenger side, and the thing, when we hit it, it was up in the air, kind of spinning around, doing this like pirouette thing. And he said that it looked into the van right at him. And he goes, and it was eye level with me. And I was like, it was like in slow motion, dude. And now the Japanese, they call it Satori, where time kind of stands still. And he was describing that to me. And he says, man, he goes, I looked and this thing was like eye level with me. It was looking right at me. He's like, and it had these like really big eyes. It was yellow eyed. He goes, I'll never forget. It was a werewolf. He goes, and it looked a lot like the thing I saw when I was a kid that was flying around. The thing that was reported in and around that area, but it had no wings. He goes, and then the thing just kind of kept spinning and then ran off into the brush. And he said that it was weird because after that happened, he had gone over to his friend's house and his mother answered the door. It was the next day. They worked together and they worked at a nightclub. And he said that he goes, I go to the next day to get my friend. We bounced there. And his mother said that he had been hurt, that he had fallen because he had a day job working, doing construction, and that he had fallen two stories and broke a bunch of ribs. And so that he was convalescing. He was like, oh, that's too bad. And she wouldn't even let him in to go see him because he was like, he was asleep. And his mother was real, kind of like she doted on him, you know, like he says he like babied him, but it's like, you know, she's kind of a spoiled dude, you know, by his mom, like his mama's boy, you know, they used to always tease him like, Elias, you're mama's boy. And so they said, okay. And so they left and they went to work, and it was him and his friend Cristiano and this other guy that had been staying in Rio de Janeiro. And, you know, he said that it was a weird thing. Like they didn't see Elias for about a week, and then he showed back up at work just out of the blue, and he was like, he was fine. And they were like, what happened to your ribs? I thought your ribs were broken. That's something that doesn't heal quickly, you know. He said, oh, no, I'm fine. My mom was exaggerating. You know, I fell and I hurt myself. He looked a little scraped up, but he was no worse for the wear. And so they worked and everything was fine. They worked all weekend at this place. And he said that, you know, Elias did very well with the ladies. Like, women loved him. Like, he said he wasn't a good looking guy, but he always managed to get a lot of women. Like, he was like in shock by that. And so he was like, you know, we were all sitting there just talking, you know, and kind of talking crap. You know, we were kind of talking crap about him. And we were just like, why is this dude always pulling all these good looking girls, man? So he was like, he couldn't figure out why he got these good looking girls. And so his little brother Ezra had this weird thing about Elias. He didn't like him. And from when they were young, he didn't like Elias and always thought something was wrong with him. And he had a weird story about Elias. He said that one time when he was little, he was babysitting their little sister. And he said that Adriana was her name. He said that this dude, Elias, had come over and had like, he was only like 11 or 12 years old, but he had picked her up and was trying to walk out of the house with her. And so his little brother Ezra was like, what the heck are you doing? And he goes to stop him. And Elias, like he, you know, he'd been training martial arts since he was a kid. And he just threw this like back kick and like knocked the wind out of Ezra and basically just, you know, he just had a weird thing about him. And he was like, he was always trying to snatch up my little sister, was what Ezra told him. But then it didn't make sense because he didn't feel like he didn't believe him because he was like, I've never seen him act that way or be that way at all towards her. And as she got older, he said he had a crush on her. You know, with the time when he picked her up, tried to run off with her, she was like 3 or 4 years old, but he was several years older than her. And she was just kind of like, your friend's weird, kind of creepy, you know, and she would tell Henrique, like, I don't like that dude. He's weird, you know, but Ezra was convinced that that really happened. He said that he had tried to grab her. And when he threw that kick, and he said that when I looked at him, his eyes turned this like weird yellowy color. Like he was just like, there was this fiery orangey yellow color to his eyes. And on multiple occasions when he'd come over and stay the night or they'd go play baseball or whatever together, he would get mad. And at one time when he was like 12 or 13, he said that he took his bat, like a full-on Louisville Slugger bat, like a wooden bat, and broke it over his leg.
Oh, jeez.
Which is like a 12, 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's weird. And so but they knew that his mother was a very powerful, like witch. She was supposedly into witchcraft, and his dad had died mysteriously.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's this Elias guy, you know? And so they always thought that there was something weird going on with this kid, you know? And so, but, you know, Henrique was like, you know, I just gave him the benefit of the doubt. He goes, my friend Andres didn't like him, and Andres was always, like, real apprehensive around him, too, because Andres and him had liked the same girl. And so one day, get this, they were arm wrestling. He says, well, let's arm wrestle, kind of as a joke at the end of the night at the club. He goes, me and Cristiano were kind of egging him on, you know. And so he goes, Henrique said that Andres, his friend, the one that had lived in Rio, was there at the bar and told him, you know, he goes, well, let's arm wrestle for it. And Elias told him, he says, you don't want to arm wrestle me, man. I'm too strong. And he's kind of laughing about it. And no, this guy, you know, was serious. He says, no, let's do it. So Andres said, let's do it. So Elias and Andres go to arm wrestle. And as soon as it got started, there's all these people standing around, you know, the wait staff and everything at the end of the night. Elias broke his arm in two places. Like he broke Andres's arm. And Andres just starts screaming in agony. And he goes, and it was bad. Like the bone wasn't sticking out of the skin, but you could see it pushing up against it. Like it was moved over pretty bad. It was bad. And so he was like, dude, you know, Elias, pretty powerfully built guy, but he worked out, you know, stuff, but he wasn't like a monster or anything, you know? And so he's kind of jokingly told him later, he's like, because then you start taking whatever supplements you're taking so I can get strong, you know, get bigger, you know. And then they would go to the gym and this dude would be like, you know, unnaturally strong, stronger than everybody else. And so one of the things that he started to notice was this guy would go on these long hiatuses and just be gone and not go to work. And, you know, and he would call in and say, I'm not going to be there for a week or something. And then the boss liked him. They were good friends. So he would let him do it. And then he would come back and he would always be like beat up looking, like he was scratched up or something was wrong with him, you know? And so then one day when they were, I guess he said Ezra was a few years younger than him. He was like 18 or 19 and he was there with his younger sister. And he's like, he was like babysitting her. And he said that she was trying to wander outside and go play whatever. And he was like, he wouldn't let her. She wanted to go out with like her friends or something. She was like 13. You know, and he said, nah, dude, he's like, you know, you're too young to be going wandering around outside. You can't go, you know, playing with your friends, or whatever, because at that time there was some guy that was going around in a van trying to grab girls. And so he says, you know, now you're too young to be going out by yourself. He's like, you wait a little while. And when I finish doing what I'm doing, you know, with the chores or whatever, then I'll walk you to town and we'll go, you know. And so she says, OK, he said, no sooner had that happened. He goes, and I fell asleep. He goes, and I just remember hearing music playing and my sister being on the phone. And next thing you know, he goes, I'm asleep. And then I'm awakened to like the screaming, terrifying noise. And she goes, we had an unexpected little sibling that wasn't planned. It just kind of, you know, there was only 3 years old at that time. He goes, and my parents were like, you know, I didn't think they were going to be able to have kids. I mean, my mom was like 45, you know, when she had this, the little one, you know, or she was 43 or something like that. But he said, he goes, yeah. She goes, like, my mom was at work, my dad was at work, and I was babysitting. And this is Ezra, his younger brother, the one that got his fingers, you know, smashed. And he said, I hear this screaming, and I run in there, and Adriana's like trying to, I don't know the little girl's name, I didn't get her name, but she's being pulled out of the window by this wolf-like creature that looks like a werewolf. And he was literally like, he had broken through the glass, and it was all like, I don't know how he goes, I didn't hear any noise or whatever. And it was the window that was nailed shut, but this thing had come through the glass and was grabbing her out of the crib. And he said the arms looked like they were stretched out, like unnaturally long. And he said that there was this weird greenish glow around him too. Like there was this like mist or something.
Always with the green mist, the green
light.
It is weird,
right? Yeah. So then he says, he goes, dude, all I had was this machete. And so I grabbed it. This is what Henrique was telling me that his brother said. His brother grabbed the machete and went up and started like swinging and hitting the arms of this dude, of this creature, whatever it was. And he said, and it was making cuts on it. But he goes, but as hard as I was swinging, it should have been chopping the arm right off. But all it was doing was putting these slashes on it. And then it would pull the arm back and then just keep doing it and pull the arm back. He goes, and then finally the arms drop down to the ground and it propels itself through the window. But its hips were really wide. It had these really big legs and it got stuck in the window. He goes, and at that point, me and my little sister, he goes, she showed incredible bravery for being like a 13-year-old kid. She started hitting it with a lamp and with ceramic toys and a piggy bank. And he goes, and I was hitting it with a baseball bat over and over again. It was an aluminum bat. I bent it on the thing. He's like, we did everything we could. He goes, at the end was nothing left. I threw a soccer ball at it, you know? And finally he goes, right after I hit it in the head with a soccer ball, then it just goes back out the window. And I said, see, even werewolves don't like soccer. And so, you know, Enrique's like, he's like, I love soccer, man. I said, yeah, I know. You're from Brazil. Okay. But, all this insanity was going on. And he comes home and from the club or whatever, and his family's all there and they're gathered around. And the police had just left. And he was like, what happened? You know, this was in the late 90s. And he said that it was crazy. He's like, dude, I couldn't believe what was going on. There was all this like just insanity going on. He goes, and I was a young dude, you know, and my brother was crying. You could tell he had been crying. My sister had been crying and my parents were all freaked out, you know, and the neighbors had come out. They had seen this thing. They called it the Lobazon, and that it had gone into their yard and killed two of their chickens. You know, they had these like gamecocks or whatever. And so the neighbor down the road had claimed his Doberman had been like basically disemboweled by this creature. So there again, he goes to work and Elias is nowhere to be found. So 2 or 3 days later, he comes in and he's all beat up. And he said, dude, this guy looked like he had been beaten with a bat. And he goes, and his arms had slash marks all over him. And he says, he's like, I went and I told Cristiano, he goes, and Andreas, and I said, Andreas, did you notice his arms? Like he's like, and they were like, yeah, what the hell? So he goes, we were talking to him. He was very quiet. He didn't want to talk. He's like, and he was always a big guy. He was about 6'4", which is big for a, you know, Brazilian dude. And he says, dude, I was like, you know, kind of taken aback by that, you know, at least in that area. There's some places in Brazil where people get big. I'm not going to lie. There's some big dudes, but that his village, he goes, they're like jungle people. That's his own words. He said, they're like not real big, but he was big, you know? And he goes, by the same token, of course, he goes, I was big too. You know, Henrique was bigger than his siblings, and so was Andres. Cristiano was short, fat little dude, he said. But he said that they were big, you know. And he said that, which was really shocking, how strong Andreas was. And Andres was in the military with him, and they were both, you know, they did very well. And to see him get his arm broke like that easily by Elise was shocking. But then when he sees this guy, like, you know, all cut up or whatever, he goes home and he tells his brother Ezra, he says, look, don't get all excited because I know you don't like Elias and you think he's weird or whatever. He's like, but do me a favor. Let's go.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals.
Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm going to go meet him at the restaurant. You know, it's after hours, whatever. We're going to go to this restaurant, bar, whatever stays open. Which is really, he said it was a glorified taco stand with like a bunch of tables. So they went over there to go meet him so they could eat, you know, whatever Brazilian food. And he said that this place was open late, you know, whatever. And he said the guy, Elias, shows up all covered up, wearing like a long sleeve shirt and a hoodie.
Yeah, real cute.
Yeah, and he goes, he's like, dude, what happened to your wounds? You know, like I thought you were, and he said it was hot. He's wearing this, you know. He said, you had all these cuts on your arm. He goes, I saw you with your sleeve rolled up at work. And he said, oh, no, just this, you know, I got into some barbed wire because I was out running around and made up some really ridiculous, like.
Yeah, because that just happens, a wild barbed wire attack.
That happened to you?
You're just walking along and run into a whole grid of barbed wire that you somehow didn't notice. It just came out of nowhere.
No, I mean, I see it all the time.
Wild barbed wire. Just hacking people left and right.
A coil of barbed wire.
We've got to do something about this.
And then I start hearing like metal chains being like keys jangling, like I know, like a rattlesnake lets me know to stay away from barbed wire.
Okay.
When barbed wire strikes back.
when barbed wire attacks.
Yeah.
So anyways, joking aside, the barbed wire attacks, 1999, it was brutal. There was barbed wire everywhere. But anyway, he said he gave him some ridiculous story about how he was walking home and he had been drinking and he fell down and landed on some barbed wire, was crawling up under it or something. He goes, it was ridiculous. It was totally ridiculous. He goes, and my little brother just recoiled in horror. The next thing you know, I look around and Ezra's gone. So he goes, I go back to the house after a couple drinks and eating some food. He's like, and I tell my little brother, I said, where'd you go? He said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, he looked me dead in my eye and he said, that your friend, Elias, is the one that came to the house. And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to think I'm crazy. He goes, he wears an earring, like this gold earring on his left ear. He goes, this thing that was trying to get through the window, he's like, it had an earring on its ear. And he's like, really? He goes, the ears looked wolf-like, but it was still pierced. There was an earring on its ear. He goes, and I remember the hand, the finger, it had like this weird, this devil-looking ring that looked like he had a ring that looked like the devil, like horns with the beard and everything, like how a devil face looked, you know? And he goes, and I remember there was a ring on this thing's finger. This was no dog man like we would think of out in the woods. And he told him, he says, the Lobazon, that's him. That's got to be him. He's like, and he was doing things, like he was stretching his arms out, elongating his limbs. And he's like, and this thing was so strong, the only thing stopping him was his hips were too wide to get into the whatever. And the neighbors verified this because they heard the commotion. They came out and they saw this wolf-like leg sticking out of the window, and they thought there was a giant wolf trying to get in. But their cousin that had been staying with the neighbors had seen this werewolf creature come and grab their gamecocks, and he shot at it and got it to leave. And like he said, Elias was always coming in banged up. There was always something wrong with this guy. He was always showing up late for work. One day he said his vehicle had broke down. Some guys jumped him, you know. And then there were people who had gone missing. And he said that over the last 10 years, there had been several people who had gone missing. And get this, there was one group of foreigners. They were from like Sweden or something like that. And they had gotten attacked by what they said looked like a boy. This was like, you know, years ago, back when they were kids. And he said that it looked like a boy who had backward bent legs like a wolf, who had ran out after their van and had attacked it. And so they reported that to the authorities, which is a story because his dad worked at the town hall or whatever. And his dad was like saying that there was some weird stories coming out of the woods, you know, to be careful, you know. And when they gave a description of the kid, he goes, dude, my brother and my dad even said that the description sounded like Elias. But he would have been a child. So that's very interesting. And the fact that his mother was like into Brujeria, he goes, my parents are always very, very adamant that I don't stay the night over there. It was okay for Lisa to come to our house, but not for me to be over there because of what she did, you know. And she was known as a local witch. If you had a problem with somebody, you could go to this lady and she would put a curse on somebody. So his dad, who died mysteriously, get this, his dad was shot. Nobody knows who, how. He was found in a ditch, shot dead. And when they found him, he had like feathers all over his body and he had like blood around his mouth. And they, it was not from human blood. And so there were stories of somebody going around and messing in people's chicken coops and messing with their goats and stuff. It was a very rural area, you know. And then this guy's found shot with his chest blown out and then thrown in a ditch on this like country road. And he looked like, you know, somebody that had been eating something raw, like, because there was blood around his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was one of these things too.
Yeah. Man. And there was feathers and stuff. I mean, so he goes, I remember thinking back. He goes, Henrique told me, he says, we started putting two and two together. And Ezra kept saying, he goes, I think Elias is this Lobazon. I think that's what it is. I think it's what he is. And he's like, so we decided to look into it. Like we started looking up every type of legend about this thing and what we could think of. So we went to this priest in Sao Paulo. And the priest told him, he said that he had dealt with the Lobazon back in the 1970s. He said in the mid 70s, there was a rash of sightings of this creature and that people had ran into his church. It was on the edge of town to seek asylum, shelter from this thing, because at night it was going into people's houses and it had actually killed like three people back in the 70s. And he said that the thing went into people's house, like, and it literally, like, you know, to say on YouTube, unalived someone, you know, in front of their family. It was like he killed another man, but this man that he killed was like that. There was a disgruntled worker at the factory. And he said, this is what the priest told him. And the priest said, look, this thing that did this, whatever, he targeted people that were working at that factory. And they were supervisors, one of which this guy had gotten fired. So he's like, I think, you know, I'd pinpointed who it was. It was this disgruntled worker. And so he's like, I went and I confronted this guy at his house. He's like, with two other people, two other clergy. He's like, and this guy literally ran out the back of his house and jumped over a fence like it was nothing, like over a chain link fence, and was gone. He's like, and then eventually the guy was found dead, and it looked like it was from a self-inflicted gunshot wound in an abandoned house. And so he said that ended this reign of terror of this Lobazon, but he goes, but this had happened over and over again. And of course, there are a lot of legends of these things in Brazil. This is what Henrique told me. He goes, when we were children, he goes, there was even a song about the Lobazon, you know, don't be alone walking on the road at night. You know, the Lobazon is there, give you a fright, blah, 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 blah. But in Portuguese, you know, whatever. And he said that it's a very scary story. He goes, and when I was young, he's like, I had a book that I got from the library that was about the Lugaru, which is a French story. And he said that my uncle had traveled and he had gone, and his uncle did something pretty amazing. He was, not only was he a black belt in jiu-jitsu and a pretty amazing guy, he lived in Japan for a while and studied with some people that were Japanese shoot fighters and Japanese jiu-jitsu. He's like, but he was in the French Foreign Legion.
Oh, wow.
And at one time, he's like, he was on a freighter, on a ship, and he said that there was a Frenchman there that was telling him all about the Lugaru. And he said when he got to the French Foreign Legion, some of the commanding officers or whatever, you know, they would come in, they would come from France and like help them train or whatever, because they were doing basically the bidding of the French government. So sometimes they would be in contact with these higher up French, and he met a French colonel. And he said that he gave him a story. This guy was really into like the occult and stuff. And he goes, and one night they were all up drinking and talking or whatever, and it was their off time when they were off. They have like a weekend furlough, whatever it is. And they went into town, and this French colonel was like, he was super cool. He was the only really cool officer there. And he goes, and we got drunk together, and he goes, and he told a crazy story about when he was living in this small village outside of Paris, or actually it was Sines. And he said that outside of Sines, and he said that there was this, he was from Paris, but he said that his great aunt had been attacked and had her arm ripped off by an upright wolf-like creature because there had been a series of attacks from this Lugaru that had attacked people. And that happened back in like the 80s, you know, the mid 80s. And this woman had had her left arm had been completely torn off. And the police just chalked it up as like, oh, it's a animal attack, whatever. But he said that, you know, the story of the Beast of Gévaudan, it was like, it's very like they believe in that completely. Like that's a real thing. And that this guy told him, he said, oh, yeah, there's Lugaru all over the woods in France. And he's so whenever his uncle asked him what they were, because they have the Lobazon over there in Brazil, it's a Portuguese name, whatever. He said, oh, they're people. They're people that can shapeshift into these beings. And he was very adamant that he goes, if you come across one of these things, dude, that's it for you. I mean, they're going to kill you. He's like, their whole goal is to kill. He's like, now, if they don't kill you, he goes, they have a reason for it. And he said that looking back now, Henrique and me were talking, and he said, you know, one of my neighbors over here in Ventura, he said that had told us that one day they were coming home from the gym and this wolf-like creature ran across the road. And then 2 days before that, somebody's cat had gone missing and they saw like the remnants of it, basically. Like they found the remnants of it. And he said, dude, he goes, I can tell you, it's like almost anywhere you go, there are stories of these things. This is him telling me this and I'm listening. And I told him, I said, you need to go listen to my show and get caught up. And so he has been. He's been, you know, the last couple months, he's been hitting it pretty hard and listening to the show, whatever. But I told him, I said, dude, you're going to freak out when I tell you this, but there's been a lot of sightings of these things. But he said that the one that was showing up, in Sao Paulo, that one that was showing up and terrorizing people for a while, get this, the priest told him and his friends and his dad that this thing for like 2 months was just appearing to people. People were seeing it on the edge of the woods when they would walk, and then it would just kind of duck back and go back into whatever. And then they saw it in this abandoned factory and it chased some people, then it stopped. He's like, there was like this lead up, at least that's what Henrique was saying. The way the priest was telling him, or priests, there was more than one, they were telling him that there was a buildup to this thing. It didn't just start out going out and running around killing people. Like for a couple of months, it was just appearing to people. Like it appeared outside of a theater.
I wonder why that is. It's weird. You know?
Well, people, you know, it's weird because I told Henrique this, and you guys know this. We've interviewed 1,000 people about these things. They have this weird, like, I don't know what you want to call it, like, it's like they get off on making you afraid.
Yeah.
Like this obsession with fear.
Like seasoning for their prey or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's part of it, but it seems like maybe what we could be dealing with when people see the dog man, what they call this dog man creature, what if what they're seeing is like that's the prelude to the, you know, or maybe that particular day, this werewolf doesn't feel like killing. They're always like, oh, well, people see it and then they live. Yeah, people also get killed. I mean, you know, and but it's always chalked up to something else. And I'm not saying like, you know, I know that there was all this flap with the dog attacks and all that. I'm not saying that every time somebody gets killed by an animal, a wild animal attacks, and dog attacks do happen. And I'm not saying every time an animal like a horse gets torn up or a donkey or a calf or, you know, a goat. It's not necessarily the Lobazon or the Lugaru or the werewolf, dogman, whatever. The Cadejo is killing it. No, these things, I'm just saying that just because these things, you saw one and it didn't kill you, that doesn't mean that it's not going to.
I mean, plenty of people have seen, like, you know, grizzly bears, swam with great white sharks, like, what is it, and lived to tell the tale. silverback gorillas, they've interacted with them, like, and it didn't kill them, but that doesn't mean that it can't or it won't. They're still fierce predators, you know. These things aren't giant beasts with super strength to be your friend, to eat plants.
Yeah.
Look, all I know is my grandpa and my uncle were in the Vietnam War, and they both survived bullet wounds. So I think that if I shoot myself with a bullet...
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
A couple times, there's enough evidence to prove that I should survive unharmed.
Because other people you know were shot and they didn't die.
It's in my blood, even though I'm not blood related to either of those gentlemen.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's a scientific assessment there from Paranormal Roundtable and Scientist Tony. He has spoken, and that's basically what it is.
You don't hear from me, it's a failure.
Yep, that's it. So what we're dealing with when you stop and you break this down, now let's talk about this. I mean, like, that's pretty much the story, you know, but the end, though, was Elias eventually, he moved away and they lost touch, you know, and it was shortly after that incident because he really believed when they came back from talking to the priest that was recommended to them, and after talking to his uncle about the weird Lugaroo stuff, the connection there. He was like convinced that Elias was that, you know, that's what he was. And he was very angry. And so talking to one of the local farmers in the area who had a small farm, he had told him that they had dealt with a Lobazon back in the 50s and or the late 50s, early 60s. There was another rash of attacks and they shot it and they killed it. But they used silver buckshot. And so, you know, that's what this farmer told him he needed to do. And he goes, and I was like so angry and so enraged at this guy, if it was him, you know, and all the weird circumstantial evidence pointed to it being him, you know, he's like, I'm not going to mix bones about it. I was going to shoot him, you know, I was going to confront him. And if he didn't give me the answers that I wanted, dude, I was going to shoot him with silver. And I said, were you going to kill him? He goes, I didn't know if I was going to kill him or just maybe like shoot him from a distance with buckshot and see if it did something, you know, like if it got, you know. And he goes, and I had all these weird thoughts in my head about trying to maybe cut him with silver or something. He goes, me and my friends were trying to figure out how we were going to do it. He's like, but all the roads just led to, well, ultimately, he's probably going to end up dying. He's like, so I don't want to be involved in a conspiracy for murder, you know. And so he goes, I just decided against it, you know, and then, you know, we were going to go talk to him and confront him. And he's like, I'm not going to lie. Cristiano, he's like, he's not a real big, strong guy. And Andreas had already had his arm broke by him. And he goes, and I'm thinking, man, this guy he was a tough dude. You know, I don't know if I can take this guy if I confront him and he's upset, he's angry. And he said, we, you know, you're not supposed to have, you know, a gun or whatever. He was like, everybody has a rifle. But he's like, you know, they're always like, oh, you know, in certain areas of Brazil, they're very strict about it. In other areas, they're not. He's like, but where we were, you know, it was rural, you know, and everybody had like a rifle or a shotgun. And he said, dude, I took my dad's shotgun and I started to go, you know, down the street. I drove down over there where he was at and knocked on the door. His mother answered the door and said he had left. And then after that, they never saw him again. He moved away. He'd moved away. They never saw him again. They don't know what happened to him. But he said, you know, he was talking to some of his neighbors over there in California about this werewolf-looking creature, you know, that they had seen. And one of them said that it had appeared. And he's going to give me her name. Her name is Stephanie. So she's supposed to be getting in touch with me in the next couple of days as of the recording of this. But he said that she saw this thing up close and that it was like looking in the bedroom at her daughter while she was asleep. And it had like yellow eyes and it was about 7 foot tall, massive shoulders. and with like this like taper down at the waist, and then these really big thighs, built like a bodybuilder. You know how they people see the werewolf dog man, you know. And so I asked, I told him, I said, do me a favor and ask her if she thinks it's like if it could be a person, like a shapeshifter, or if it's, you know, just something she thinks is like a an animal looking thing. Because very, very seldom, folks, do we actually get reports of people saying, oh, it's like an animal. There's just one, you know, type of encounter where people are like, oh, it's like an animal type thing. I don't put much stock into those, man, because it always seems like people, when they tell those stories, they're very vague and they don't go into much detail. And like, they don't really know what they saw, you know? I don't know. I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around it's an animal. Okay. Because, you know, even when I thought that what I had seen was some sort of, I don't know, like physical creature, some physical whatever, you know, my friend's brother just, well, he's my friend too, but my friend just kind of blew that out of the water by saying, you know, nah, man, it was like this vapor on his back, you know, and Anthony, you were there when he said that.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, it kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, you never told me that. And he was like, well, you never asked. But that kind of changed everything for me, because then it was like, it's not what I thought it was. You know, it's not a, and over the course of the last few years, there's been an evolution of our thinking that has changed a lot about, you know, just the way we think and see everything. Like if you go back to the early episodes, you know, of course, you know, when Armando was on, he was always talking about the Anunnaki and stuff like that. And I would just kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. But then after reading into it and actually studying the history, I had already read some of the Sitchin work, and I wasn't, and honestly, I still don't really agree with everything he talks about. That's not really 100% my view, even though people say it is, certain people anyway, but that's not, you know, I don't take that as the gospel. But it's just a theory that I've proposed, you know, as like to what could be, you know, what's going on with these dogman creatures. They could have been created by another race of beings to keep humans as a slave race, keep them in line. That was my whole thinking on that possibly being the case. But now I'm thinking maybe that's one answer. But then there's also this inner earth connection that I believe where they are seen in and around cave systems. And then I also believe, and I still stand by this, that there are shapeshifters. And maybe these shapeshifters, and this is just a theory, folks. It's all just theory and conjecture and postulating on these theories. What if that being is something that is created from like a hybrid from the actual dogmen themselves that are always that way? What if they can actually turn humans into that? Because if you think about the show we did on Sunday with the Caspian Sea, those merman creatures, whatever, I don't know what you want to call them. What was the name they said? The Runan. I forgot what we talked about it on the
Runan Shah or something.
The Runan
like that.
Shah, yeah. The Runan Shah, okay. And we did a show about that called the Horrors of, I forgot what it was called.
I think it was called Horrifying Deep Sea Humanoids.
Yeah, Horrifying Deep Sea Humanoid Encounters, right? So when you look at that, and this one was called the haunted, what is it called? The ship, the ghost ship of the Caspian Sea. Mm-hmm. When you go back and listen to that episode, it is a weird episode. Okay. What if those creatures that they had in those bags that we did, the show we did on the live stream, and that black goo, the wolf-like creatures, what if that is the actual dogman? And they take that. And when they bite you, they inject that black goo into you, and then you become that. And it warps and changes your DNA to where this guy's dad was that way, and then he had a child that was that way. Could it be reinforced by a type of black magic, which really is just black science that we don't understand? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It also could be something to do with different dimensions. I mean, if you maybe think about it like that, there are, you know, physical dogman creatures that are native to this earth.
Like inner earth species, maybe?
Yeah, they're like an inner earth species, and they are, like, they actually you know, are a little bit more tame comparatively to maybe some of these outside ones. But then these outside ones are coming in and trying to kill off this native population and kind of just like encroach on their territory. And then so like you, a lot of these more violent or more dangerous accounts you might hear, there might be these things doing something. And these accounts where it's like, oh, it's just a guy and his son, they live in the woods. And, you know, they do have problems because you are becoming a werewolf. But it's nothing to the extent of like where you're being sieged by like multiples of these, where, you know, you're having to fight basically tooth and nail on the, like a daily basis, like you would on some of these accounts where they're being attacked. Like, it's not even just like, oh, I'm these things are on my property. Like, it's like, no, these things are trying to kill me, or they're trying to get to my house, or they're just 100% harassing me. Those accounts might.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Be these other creatures that are coming from different dimensions that have more evil or more malicious senses or like stuff like that. Whereas like these more natural ones that kind of grow up and they kind of live with us, they might be some kind of human or what's it called? Like a mix between those cave dwelling ones and some humans.
Mm-hmm.
And like it might just be
a hybrid.
Yeah. Throughout the years where like they just continue living, but it's like they're an outsider of both groups, but they do kind of fit in more. Or then it's just kind of back to what I keep harping on. It's like we don't know anything. And like all these, every story should lead to like 15 new questions, because every story is like new evidence about new things that we don't know. And it's like it leads you to a new realm of like, okay, now we're just getting introduced to black goo, where it's like, well, is black goo a new phenomena, or is this something that has always been there and now we're just discovering it, or is that like now we're just highlighting or paying more attention to it, kind of like how Bigfoot and Dogman were, where Bigfoot came out first and everyone kind of was like, ooh, you believe in Bigfoot, and now a lot of people are like, oh yeah, of course, Bigfoot. But then when Dogman came out, it was like, oh, you believe in werewolves? Are you stupid? And now it's like, okay, yeah, Dogman, that makes sense. Like people are more becoming more open to it. And it's like, okay, so black goo, is this something where, like I said, people are like, oh, okay, more stories are coming out about it and people are now finding out more about it? Or is it something that like, oh, this thing just came and is now affecting people in a different way? It's causing new transformations because now we're getting Dogman with wings and we're getting, you know, all kinds of these weird looking creatures that just like don't make sense. Where it's like, okay, how the heck did someone hide that? Or like, how the heck did that go unnoticed for so long? Unless maybe something new was added to the environment that causes these new changes. So like, it's one of those tough things where like, until we figure out a way to determine or rule out some of the questions we have, all we're going to get is more and more questions with these new encounters of weirder and weirder creatures.
Yeah. What do you think, Anthony?
I think that there's definitely more than one explanation for where these creatures come from. I mean, like the fact that there's like, I guess like orders or like covens of these kind of like shape-shifting people who are into the occult, and they'll take different forms like werewolves or vampires, like we've covered on previous episodes. What if they didn't come first? What if they found a way to kind of synthesize human being hybrid of these canine and vampire creatures that were already around?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
these creatures probably predate like people shapeshifting into them. They're probably like a race of beings that just existed like all throughout humanity's history and prehistory. They were already there. And these kind of black magic practitioner cults, they kind of just, they found a way to basically
become that.
To take that form. So
this is,
you know, and then of course there's the whole chimera origin story. So I don't know.
I mean, this is the interesting aspect. It's the chicken and the egg. Like, did we try to match their form, or did they try to match our form? Like, did they mm-hmm. come as those creatures and, like, be like, oh, I want to blend in to my new prey, which are humans. So, like, they started trying to turn into us. And now, like, what we consider shapeshifters might just be them returning to their original form. So, like, it's one of those things where, like, that could be another aspect of it, to where it might be that they are already 100% original. Like, that is their form. And that this fake, like, humanoid organism that they portray and try to use to blend in might be the thing that they use to lure people or you know, just, like I said, survive on this planet surrounded by us, or try to figure out ways to cause more harm. Because, I mean, I think we all here agree that they are pretty much here to do some sort of evil. I mean, at the very least, nothing good for humanity, like humanity, not these fake half humans that they portray as.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Interesting theories. But we don't know. We'll just have to keep looking for the answers. And thank you for sending me the stories. Thank you to Enrique. And of course, thank you, Rodrigo, for getting me in touch with him and for your work on translating for me with the Brazilian Exorcist episode. Go back and listen to that one. And listen to the episode of the Caspian's ghost ship. It's definitely not about ghosts. I mean, it's not a ghost ship. It's like just the inhabitants were, you know, just go check it out. And then go check out the horrors, the deep sea horrors, humanoids, whatever it's called. Those episodes, you know. But thank you to everyone who tuned in. Please like and subscribe. And thank you for listening to Paranormal Roundtable. And good night.